another book for the opposition bookshelf, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
And as always, Barry, I'm very glad to be back with you. And I'm very glad that we're able to be together in the studio, something we don't get to do too often. And that always sounds better when I'm editing it. Believe me, it sounds a lot better.
And I'm sure it sounds better to our listeners.
I think so.
Well, if you've been with us this week, ladies and gentlemen, you understand that we have been talking about constitutional abuse. And we've been looking at some of the actions and activities from our elected end of the spectrum. So now we're going to be looking at our academic end of the spectrum for more abusing of our Constitution. Now, our case in point today comes from an author. This isn't just any author, though, ladies and gentlemen. This author is a professor at Georgetown University. And guess what he teaches, Chuck?
Constitutional law.
Constitutional law, which if you've ever taken one of our Institute on the Constitution courses, you understand that when you learn constitutional law in college or in Georgetown University, probably their college of law, you're not learning the Constitution and what it says. You're learning case law studies that have formed our current misunderstanding of the Constitution.
And therein lies the rub, Barry. These guys understand the Gramscian model. If you are a listener to our show, we've talked about the Gramscian model, which is what's known as the Long March model. And what it is a long march through the institutions. You take over a system, not by getting yourself elected necessarily, but by getting hold of the education apparatus.
Right, because if you can control what developing minds are being exposed to and what they're being told is true, then when they get into positions in industry, in business, in economics, in education, and in politics and government, you've put your worldview philosophy into power.
You've already won.
Yes, you
because
have.
Basically it doesn't matter which quote-unquote side of the aisle that you sit on. You own both sides of the aisle.
I was going to say, you don't. There isn't even a side of the aisle. It's the whole room.
Well, you run into what we have now. You run into the argument about how much control will the government have. The question is no longer, will the government be in charge of all these things? It's how it will be administered.
To what extent they will let you have any freedom from their control.
And the fact that this guy teaches at Georgetown should say a lot, because that is considered one of the elite
yes, it is.
Law schools wherein people, a lot of judges come out of Georgetown, a lot of elective representatives come out of Georgetown, mm-hmm. a lot of people who are fighting cases at the Supreme Court level and at the district and federal circuit court levels come out of Georgetown.
Georgetown's a very important school in our nation's academia.
Exactly.
But this author is a professor of constitutional law by the name of Lewis Michael Seidman. Now, Professor Seidman has written a new book, Chuck, and it's not actually out yet. It's forthcoming. I think it's going to be published later this spring. So if you want to put it on your wish list, ladies and gentlemen, you can go ahead and do so. But I'm going to wait until it gets to the dollar bin,
yeah.
which should be just a couple of months after it comes out.
It shouldn't be too long.
And the book is entitled On Constitutional Disobedience. Lovely title, Chuck. I think he kind of maybe cribbed that from somebody else. But
almost for sure.
On Civil Disobedience.
Yes, On Civil Disobedience. Yeah, it's been done.
It's been done before. But according to Professor Seidman, his thesis is the Constitution's broken. That document that was penned 230 plus years ago hasn't kept up with the times, Chuck.
Again, this is an evolutionary view of government. Government must evolve.
Yes. Well, and they believe that the Constitution, now it's interesting because if you looked at the thought of Oliver Wendell Holmes, Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court in the early part of the 20th century, his belief was the Constitution was an organic instrument. It was a living document that evolved with the times. In other words, he believed in the Constitution growing and changing and evolving. Well, even though Professor Seidman ultimately agrees with Oliver Wendell Holmes, his problem is it's not growing and evolving fast enough to suit him. And his idea is our obedience to a archaic, idiosyncratic, and evil constitution is what's hurting our country.
And a real quick segue before I go into that, do you know where Oliver Wendell Holmes got that idea of the organic living, breathing document? I know you do.
I know. Yes, I do. And you learn this in our Institute on the Constitution courses, so we're going to give you a freebie today, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right.
Oliver Wendell Holmes went to law school at Harvard University.
Yep.
And while he was at Harvard Law, he was mentored by the dean of the law school, a gentleman by the name of Christopher Columbus Langdell. Now, Langdell is forgettable.
Yes.
By the vast majority of everybody. Everybody's kind of heard of Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr., but nobody's ever heard of Christopher Columbus Langdell. They've heard of his namesake, yeah, Christopher Columbus. But Langdell, as the dean of the law school, was an innovator, Charles, because he was the originator of the case law study method for constitutional law. And how he came about that? He looked at the biological determinism in the natural world that was posited by one Charles Darwin and decided if it works in biology, it should work for the law.
Right. And not realizing that the law is not a living creature.
Ah, but...
And see, also not but realizing that Darwin was wrong.
Dr. Franken Langdell said, live!
Yeah. It's alive!
And thus started us studying, instead of studying the text of the Constitution and how it applies, they started studying the decisions of the courts around it and started building a case law study method that to this day is the prevailing belief system of our federal judiciary. It's not what the Constitution says. It's stare decisis. It's let the precedent stand.
There are a handful of law schools that still study the Constitution itself, but they're few and far between, and by necessity, they have to study the case law approach because, unfortunately, in the modern practice of law, you can't get away without citing case law. So you have to understand it from that.
And there's a place with citing cases,
sure,
and utilizing well-reasoned arguments to make your current case. But if you do that totally divorced from the foundational bedrock of the constitutional provisions, like we would say the Ten Commandments of the law, thus saith the Constitution, you have really assisted in this damage to our country.
Oh, sure. What you've done is you have taken a fundamental rule of law, and that is that the law is basically set in stone. It's written down. It means what it says, and it says what it means. Now, the reason you have courts is because there are places where you need clarification of what it says and what it means. Hence, the reason why you have a judiciary.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, that being said, what Seidman is arguing for is a completely different system of government wherein the law simply shifts around, and it is whatever the lawmakers say it is. In other words, he wants to take away any possible limitation on lawmakers and people in the executive branch. So he wants to, quote-unquote, unbridle the legislative and the executive branches to make law however they see fit, not according to a set of limits written, quote-unquote, 225 years ago by people who are dead.
Well, and Chuck Seidman makes this argument in an op-ed piece in the New York Times, which was published right before the end of the year. Honestly, Chuck, I believe that he wrote this commentary not because he had just suddenly had an epiphany about his view of the Constitution, but because he has a book he's publishing and he wants to generate sales for it. But he says, as someone who's taught constitutional law for almost 40 years, I'm ashamed it took me so long to see how bizarre all this is. And he's talking about us leaning on the ideas of James Madison 225 years ago. The big problem with him is the reason why it took him so long is he's teaching constitutional law. He's not teaching the Constitution. He's not looked at the original source documents. He's looking at the pronouncements of Oliver Wendell Holmes and Felix Frankfurter,
exactly,
and Hugo Black and Earl Warren and the rest of the justices of the Supreme Court all the way up through John Roberts. And, of course, he's going to say, oh, something's wrong here. Well, something is wrong, Chuck. All of those individuals have moved us away from the framework that our founders gave us in the Constitution,
that's right,
which works.
He's moving away from a rock-solid foundation to a insisting upon construction upon sand. And as we know from the biblical example, what happens when you build the wise man builds his house upon a rock, the fool builds his house upon the sand, because it runs away. Now, there's nothing new about what Seidman is saying. This is as old as pre-Roman Empire. These arguments were going on in the Roman Republic.
Yes, they were.
As the Roman Republic was deteriorating into a... I'm not saying that the Roman Republic was anything like perfect.
Far from it.
It was a pagan construction. But the fact is that the same arguments were going on, that people wanted to get away from these horrible limitations that the government had and get on to the thing where we hand over power to these leaders with vision who can see what needs to be done, and we don't want any limits on their power. And what you ended up with was 500 years of what amounts to unbridled despotism.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm going to give credit where credit is due, Chuck, because Professor Seidman did have one paragraph in his op-ed piece in the New York Times that I agree with wholeheartedly. It's this: constitutional disobedience may seem radical, but it is old as the Republic. In fact, the Constitution itself was born of constitutional disobedience.
Oh, ooh.
When George Washington and the other framers went to Philadelphia in 1787, they were instructed to suggest amendments to the Articles of Confederation, which would have had to have been ratified by the legislatures of all 13 states. Instead, in violation of their mandate, they abandoned the Articles, wrote a new constitution, and provided that it would take effect after ratification by only 9 states and by conventions in those states rather than state legislatures. Professor Seidman, in trying to destroy the Constitution, has just given us a lovely piece of ammunition to defend against constitutional convention calls.
Yes, and exactly, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Barry and I have just been discussing here. There's one coming in Ohio yet again. This will be the third legislative session in a row.
It'll probably be introduced in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah, it'll be introduced in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And really, if you love limits on government, then you need to get involved with calling your state rep and your state senator and telling them you want nothing to do with a new constitutional convention, because what will come out of this are radical changes to the United States Constitution. You can't get away from it. That is the current spirit of the age, is radical changes to the way the government is structured and how it's run and the powers delegated to it by the states. That will completely disappear. The states will essentially become nothing more than what they already are, sadly, and that is administrative districts. And by the way, guys like Seidman think that's a great idea.
Yeah, he does. Now, again, I'm going to give a little credit, because it's like the old saying, a blind pig will find an acorn every once in a while. Well, he found a couple, and here's the other one he found. He says, in the face of the long history of demands, the two main rival interpretive methods, originalism, divining the framers' intent, and living constitutionalism, reinterpreting the text in light of modern demands, cannot be reconciled. Some decisions have been grounded in one school of thought and some in the other. Whichever your philosophy, many of the results, by definition, must be wrong. And I agree with that wholeheartedly, but the big problem is the vast majority of decisions have been grounded in that living constitution mode since Oliver Wendell Holmes, in a case back in the 1920s that dealt with migratory birds, decided in a note that the Constitution was a living organism and needed to breathe and grow beyond its creator's intent.
And what's interesting about that law? It was immediately nullified by the state of Missouri.
Yeah, it's Missouri versus Holland. I just remembered the case.
The state of Missouri basically came out and said, you guys can make these decisions all day long. We're not going to obey them. And they didn't. What it had to do with was protecting geese on the migration from Canada down to the Caribbean.
Sadly, the courts found against the state of Missouri and told them that treaties superseded state laws.
But they nonetheless said,
forget it.
We're not doing it.
So there's some good things that came out of that. But again, Seidman here, as you've well pointed out, Chuck, is saying we need to pitch the document and start with something new. And he's wanting to lead the charge with his new book on constitutional disobedience. Now, I'm going to be quite honest. I am going to get a copy of this book. I'm also quite honest, I'm not going to pay full boat for it. I'm going to wait until somebody's got it for a penny on Amazon or something and go buy it.
6 months tops.
I wouldn't even give it that long. But the point is, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be talking a little bit more about this on tomorrow's program and talking about the reasons why we need to both vocally and vociferously oppose such foolish constitutional abuse.
And with that, we're out of time. Join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.